Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane podcast Patreon. I'm so excited to be recording the last episode of Sentinels Month. I'm a little bit sad, but mostly relieved. It feels like a big giant box checked that I've just been building on for a long time. Over this month on the show, if you've been listening, we have done some pretty epic episodes. The Sentinels 101 trial episode, the Trask family episode, lots of conversations about these crazy death robots, what we love, what's scary, what makes them amazing, the technology, the storylines, etc. Today's episode is all the outliers. This is an episode I am inelegantly calling the Random Ass Sentinels episode. It's one I realized right from the beginning needed to happen. And before I even introduce my guests, I'm going to review a little bit of Sentinels content. We've talked about a lot of the Sentinels storylines being themed around you've heard me say it on this show like six times. The three types of Sentinel stories we mo most often see are number one, Sentinels created to serve someone. It's the slavery storyline. We create something in our image to serve us. The second one is Sentinels that become sentient and then question their humanity. The other type of that story is when a human mind gets uploaded into a mechanical form, which also includes kind of cyborgs, but it's the discussion of like ethics and heroism in relation to an AI. The third one is Sentinels as like the death machines, the things that are going to cause the genocide of the planet. Most Sentinel storylines kind of fit into a pretty linear format, and that's what we covered in the Sentinels 101 episode. This episode's going to talk about all the weird little outliers, the random little appearances of Sentinels all over the fucking place that you just don't expect. There is no way that this episode will cover all of them. I guarantee there are alternate realities and all kinds of crazy things, but this is where we're going to talk about all the random Sentinel stories that didn't quite fit anywhere else. I'm so thankful, sir, for some delightful guests that I enjoy spending time with who are not afraid of a little homework because this one took a little bit of prep. Let me welcome to the show Chase Morrison and Justin Kosmachuk. I'm so happy to see you both. If you'll just introduce yourselves, let us know your names and pronouns, a little bit about you, where we might know you from, and I would love to hear what it was like for you to jump into this crazy fringe side universe of Marvel Comics when it comes to the Sentinels. Let's begin with Justin. Hi, Justin. Welcome back to Gray Malkin Lane.
Thank you for having me back again. So I am Justin, also going by J Cosmic Online. That's Cosmic with a K. Pronouns are he, him. I am mostly found on Instagram. I am part-time professional who does business work and part-time cosplayer, full-time collector.
What was it like for you to research random ass sentinels, my friend?
It was really fascinating, to be honest, just because there are slight differences between the models, but some of these slight differences do make a difference in their effectiveness. And just there were criteria that I put together when doing my Sentinels. So I know this wasn't a part of the homework, but I thought it was something a little extra the following.
Nothing, you are nothing if not a little extra, my friend.
Always. The four criteria I put into thought with the Sentinels are their appearance. So, how it looks overall, is it aesthetically pleasing? Is the design appealing? Intimidation, how scary would they be to encounter if they were hunting me? Features, what are these Sentinels capable of? Can they just fire rays or can they do like 20 things? And effectiveness, how successful are they at what they do?
And then welcome back to the show, Chase Morrison. Hi, Chase. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Glad to be here. I'm excited to do this. I read so many comics. I'm Theo Chase. I'm mostly just on social medias as Rock Throng Man.
I used the name Chase Morrison twice, but you go by Theodate Chase. Are both correct or just one?
Both are correct.
Okay. But you prefer Theo. I'll just call you Theo.
Yeah, either works. I mostly am just on Twitter talking about comics all the time. I love reading. I love homework. So this was a lot of fun for me. Took me all over the place. Everything from X-Men comics to Howard the Duck. Machine Man is a lot. It was a lot of fun. I'm excited. Anybody who knows me knows that my favorite thing is the like obscure and out of the way characters. So this is exactly my jam.
That's up my alley too.
I mean, mine as well. I have a whole show about it, right? Like, so we've talked all about Sentinels. I'm not gonna spend a lot of time delving into the stuff I've already covered. We're just gonna assume everybody's already heard all of that stuff. And we're just gonna talk about obscure side Sentinels. We've arranged this into three categories. The first one we're gonna talk about is like individual kind of sentient Sentinels. Some of them are good, some of them are evil. They're all weird outliers. Some of these are not technically sentient. Now, the big one that we have not talked about this month, and I'll just do this in one line, is the series Sentinel. It's two volumes. by Sean McKeever with Justin Safer, that's because I've already done a Patreon about that character. It's the most prominent Sentinel outside of the main ones in the X-Men line. So go back and listen to that. That's a really fun deep dive with Sean McKeever. And that episode is out on the main show at this point. So for the Sentinels, I'm going to begin our conversation with a character that we've been talking about on my show this month, because we're reviewing Avengers 102 through 104, and that's Sentinel number 2. And this guy, I read as a sassy drag queen, which makes it a lot of fun, because he is a self-aware kind of bizarre little Sentinel guy. He's there right from the beginning. If you go back to that old storyline where, like, Bolivar Trask initially creates Master Mold, they turn against him, Bolivar's dead at the end. And then Larry Trask, his son, who is the closeted mutant, like, with the amulet on, creates a new, like, line of Sentinels. These are the Mark IIs. Some people consider these the scariest Sentinels because they're the first ones that can adapt. Larry Trask is working with a guy named Robert Chalmers, who is a federal judge. They relaunch these new Sentinels, and at the end of this story, the head Sentinel is number 2. Cyclops convinces them in, like, a logic trap to go fly into the sun at the end for reasons. Now, in the Avengers 102 through 104 story, we learn that the Sentinels not only survived that, but number 2 specifically became sentient because he flew too close to the sun. Now, my theory is that Larry Trask, like, uploaded his brain engrams into the Sentinel. There is no history of that in the comics, but that's my theory, because the Sentinel number 2 then starts to read as a mutant. He takes over the other Sentinels. He's very sassy. He's very bossy. He develops a base called the Ant Hill in Australia, and he has Scarlet Witch kidnapped because Jean Grey wasn't available, and he needs a female mutant to power up his machine that will then send, like, mutant energy into the sun, and solar flares will revisit the Earth and, like, sterilize humanity. And number 2 is really sassy. He's really ridiculous. At the end of this story, the mutants convince the Sentinels that number 2 is also a mutant. So the Sentinels turn on number 2. He dies. All the Sentinels go inert. One of them falls on Larry Trask, and he is dead. The Avengers just then leave it all there. All the Sentinels, the corpse of Larry Trask. And there's a story. I got to review this story specifically with Daryl and Phil on the X-Factor Files podcast. So if you want more details on this, the daughter of Robert Chalmers is Cynthia Chalmers. And she goes back to this base in Australia during the X-Men's Outback era. And her goal, she's anti-mutant, her goal is to upload her mind into a Sentinel. So number 2, the Sentinels repair themselves, and they're like, we need number 2 to leave us. So they just build him out of scrap, and he's back, and he's still a mutant. He immediately wants to destroy the Earth through sterilization once again, but he ends up getting destroyed by the Abomination of all fucking people, because he had kidnapped the Abomination to power up his death machine, along with Doc Samson. Again, go listen to the whole story. In the end of this story, Cynthia Chalmers ends up uploading her mind into number 2, like an upgraded form. She then wants to sterilize the planet as a sentient Sentinel, and she, like, fights the Avengers, and there's a whole story. And in the end, she flies into the sun, but she was faking it. She's out there in space somewhere waiting to come back. There is an anti-mutant woman in the body of number 2 somewhere in space just waiting to be used. That's where we're starting this story, is this crazy journey for Cynthia Chalmers and the sentient number 2.
It would have been a gag if Orcus just randomly brought Cynthia back, since she's just kind of floating around in space, and with them being based in space, that is a deep dive.
If I ever write for Marvel, I will bring Cynthia Chalmers back, because it's just such a fun, there's so much lore. Like, this goes back to the original generation of Sentinels and, like, the Trask family. There's so much to explore with this weird character, the human mind and the Sentinel.
Sentinels, considering themselves or being considered mutants, is, like, such a common thing, and it's so funny because the, like, different stories will be like, oh, mutation is any change, and other ones will be like, oh no, it's got to be genetic, and it comes back and forth all over the place. So it's funny that this one is a
this is before they labeled, like, the X gene as, like, the thing that causes mutation, you know what I mean? So the stories have to, like, evolve as the
Alpha, who I'm going to cover later, also considers himself a mutant, and that's from a story like just a few years ago. So, like, the mutant Sentinel thing is like a reoccurring story beat, it seems.
So let's continue. We're just going to kind of go down this list. Theo, will you tell us about the time the Hellfire Club made a Sentinel in 1906 and triggered an earthquake? Because that's
yes. Yes. So during the Utopia era, after Decimation, when all the mutants have been depowered, Beast is trying to figure out how to restart the mutant race, basically. And he assembles a bunch of big brains, and they decide to go back in time to collect blood samples from Dr. Nemesis's parents in 1906. Turns out Nemesis's dad is like a super scientist who's creating like a perpetual energy battery and is being funded by the Hellfire Club. And unknown to him, the Hellfire Club has plans for this battery that involve creating a sentinel, basically. This is well before Trask or any of them started doing this. So it's interesting that they decided to like just make it a thing that happened well before that as well.
One
And
of
the
those like
Hellfire.
paradoxes where you wonder if like Trask heard about this sentinel in 1906 and it's what gave him the idea later.
He is an anthropologist rather than a. Which is actually really interesting considering the whole like sentinels would appear no matter what thing from the Krakoa era.
I've literally written a Trask limited series. Marvel, call me.
It's Sentinels before the branding.
Yeah. But at the time, the Hellfire Club is run by this guy named Molnio, who has a room full of opium addicted mutant fortune tellers that he's using to predict the coming of the mutant race. And he's super terrified about this. The Overmen, he calls them. So he's been building this machine to try and deal with the problem. So he builds this sentinel. He gets the battery from Dr. Nemesis's dad, basically kidnaps him and takes the battery as soon as it's finished and puts it into the sentinel, which isn't really a like killer robot yet. This one's just kind of a steampunk mech that they like drive, including with like levers and a big like ship wheel. The Hellfire Club's just piloting this down the street, and it gets destroyed when Madison Jeffrey overloads the battery and it explodes and causes the real historical 1906 earthquake, which is a wild thing to throw in there. They're like, yeah, this sentinel caused this real life catastrophe that people still know about to this day.
This is a fun issue. The art is really beautiful, and the idea of a steampunk sentinel in 1906 is delightful, but putting it into continuity is weird for my brain. It doesn't all file correctly. It's strange.
I do appreciate that there's a lot of lore to cover in one issue with the Sentinel. Usually that's something that spans a little bit more.
Justin, tell us about Hardwire. We're going to jump to a whole different place.
So Hardwire, I actually was familiar with this character coming into this. Funny story, back in high school, I was obsessed with like 90s X-Force slash X-Factor Investigations, and I liked Siren. Hardwire appeared in Wolverine 154 and 155, which starred Siren. The story basically resulted in her getting her powers back after Feral originally slashed her throat in X-Force. So Hardwire was a member of a resistance group led by Geronimo Crow, who helped rescue Wolverine after he was captured by Deadpool and the administrator's team, the Scourge. Basically, Deadpool and his team kidnapped Wolverine so that his healing factor could be replicated to heal Siren. While rescuing Wolverine, Hardwire's sentinel abilities were utilized by Geronimo Crow to see if any other mutants were being held captive by the administrator during the rescue mission. While Deadpool and Siren were making their escape, Hardwire cut them off and suggested he follow Wolverine's directions. Hardwire's teammate Shooter still attacked Deadpool, which caused Siren to wake up. After a brief discussion between Siren and Logan, Hardwire went along with her team in the end. After taking out one of the guards, they found out the administrator was only a projected hologram, leading them to a dead end.
This is like pretty steeped in continuity, but I guess my question for you is, what's your take on what Hardwire is?
Hardwire is a trained mercenary who is still alive but has not been seen since this one story. The capabilities he presents include superhuman strength, durability, speed, endurance, etc., impenetrable armor, plasma discharges, analyze and counteract attacks made on it, and mutant detection. My thoughts on this sentinel. So, as mentioned earlier, I did give a rating to each one out of 5 stars. So, for appearance, I gave him 1 out of 5 stars. I'm
Yeah,
going to describe Hardwire here.
he looks like he's a sentinel who had like its parts cut off and is now being worn by a human who has like a wig made out of like oily bands. He looks like a strong buff guy wearing like sentinel cosplay with like a mask taped to his face. That's what this guy looks like. I don't know what his origins are. He's like either a sentient sentinel or a guy who dresses like a sentinel. It's not quite apparent, it seems.
He's got this weird purple body with like coils coming out of his head, and then like his face looks like a paper mask just kind of stuck on to the coils at the
But
front.
also kind of like Omega Red.
Yeah.
Like his face is a little Omega Reddish.
Oh, and being that he is a Rob Liefeld character, it appears he doesn't have feet as well. So props to him. All the criteria adds up to Hardwire getting 3 out of 5. I ended up liking him more than I thought, considering he only had 2 appearances. Rover. So Rover appeared in Grant Morrison's final story with the new X-Men series. The story revolves around the sentient bacteria Sublime, who possessed Beast, trying to use the Phoenix Force to destroy all of creation in an alternate future. Rover first appeared in New X-Men 151 as Tom Skylark's companion and aided the future X-Men against Sublime. Rover was almost sentient, making his ending a little sadder just because he did have a tragic ending. Rover was among those killed in battle with Sublime Beast in New X-Men 154.
This is a story a lot of people do remember because it's the one that ends the Morrison era, right? Here's what happens in the future if things go this way, kind of.
I gave him 3 out of 5 stars. So his appearance, it's kind of charming in like the driving a rust bucket truck kind of way. Intimidation, he is a giant robot, but knowing he won't destroy you, it's kind of like, okay, not as terrifying. And effectiveness, 3 out of 5. While he was destroyed, he was the goodest boy and a reliable teammate that was hard to kill. And features, he had the capabilities of a regular Gen 1 Sentinel, which kind of lowers his rating just because he doesn't really have that much for abilities. But overall, you do feel bad when Rover dies in the end. Having that almost sentience just kind of it gives you that attachment, you know?
It feels like the puppy gets killed. And you're hearing just as we've started, and this is why I organized it this way on purpose. We have sentient sentinels. We have like sentinels reinterpreted, as in the case of the 1906 one. And then we have like, what if we have a sentinel who's like a deadly assassin on our team or a pet? Like, look at the different variations. Writers are obsessed with reinterpreting these robots in these ways. And you're going to hear this over and over as we talk today. Keeping with this theme of like pet sentinels, tell us about Big Bot. This is one we have talked about on my show in that like endless 3 months when I covered John Byrne's The Hidden Years and it went on forever.
This is another kind of throwback to the past. Big Bot is actually 5 Sentinels. They were 5 of Larry Trask's Mark II Sentinels that got destroyed by the X-Men in the big battle you talked about earlier with number 2, with Sentinel 2. It was B7, D3, A4, G9, and G12. And basically, they were all destroyed and just left there. And their automated repair system started pulling the parts together until they had enough working parts for one working Sentinel that then just kind of flew off. And sensing a mutant in Dunphy, Illinois, crash landed because they weren't fully repaired yet. And it turns out the mutant is 10-year-old Ashley, had the mutant power to control inanimate objects, basically, like dolls and things. Basically, if she views it as a living thing, she can make it do whatever she wants. And despite Big Bot's programming still being anti-mutant, it can't really overcome her power. So she just kind of treats it like a pet and keeps it in her barn. And finally, when it manages to start adapting to her power, she gets mad at it, tells its 5 component sentinels that they hate each other and they have to like separate. So it just tears itself apart. They all just like rip themselves apart. But like Big Bot is just a sentinel. Like there's no additional programming, no mutation, no sentience. It's just a sentinel trying to destroy mutants who happens to fall under the control of a little girl who can make it do whatever she wants.
Xavier and Beast show up in this story. They help Ashley out. Xavier like cruelly like removes her ability to access her powers, and then he fucks her mom for a couple months while he's just like living in their spare room, and then he heads on his way. At the end, he's like, "It's not you, it's me, Terry." Like Ashley's hot mom.
Ashley Martin has so much potential to be like a villain in a future X-Men story. If she
She
regains her powers, comes back. Like Big Bot, Source is a damaged sentinel that ends up basically under the control of another character. Source was one of Onslaught's sentinels who was left damaged in the foothills of San Bernardino.
And we will talk about the Onslaught Sentinels a little later.
Yeah, and was damaged but sensed a mutant and went after it. Turns out the mutant is, this is all from the Ultra Girl miniseries, which
I told you it went all over the place.
yeah, this is one I had to hunt for. Ultra Girl's kind of retroactively been made a new Warriors character, but basically her whole deal is that she is just a normal by the 90s standard normal teenage girl living in Southern California, but it turns out that she's a mutant and a Kree. She's either half human mutant, half Kree, or she's a mutant Kree. The books seem to go back and forth on that. She's got super strength and flight and all that stuff. And while she's trying to get a job at a modeling agency, Source attacks, the Sentinel attacks, and she ends up very publicly like kicking the Sentinel's ass, essentially throws it like miles away. Then when she starts to figure out that she's Kree and there's this whole conspiracy, she didn't know any of this, she goes back to the Sentinel, who's laying damage to the valley, basically forces it to tell her what parts are essential for its function and tears off all the rest. So he's just a head and a battery like sitting in the mountains that she then uses to be tell her all of its information it has on Kree and mutants so she could learn more about herself.
The only Ultra Girl story that stays in my memory is during the initiative when Justice was dating her. Firestar finds out they're dating and she's like, oh, but then she finds out they're fucking and she's like, what? You were making me wait till marriage and now you're fucking Susie Sherman? And that's my favorite Ultra Girl story.
The New Warriors pop up in this miniseries and Susie mentions being attracted to Justice and Firestar picks up on this and gets super jealous about it. So like that comes back to like her first appearance. So like
Ultra Girl deserves a Patreon one day. One day in the future.
Yeah. I've never read this series. I liked Ultra Girl in it. Series is a little obnoxious because it's all her internal monologue is like that like fake handwritten script written in a journal, which is kind of hard to read.
Yeah.
That comics love to use at the time. I like her inventiveness of just like the Sentinel may want to destroy mutants, but it's too damaged to do anything. So I'm just going to use it as a source of information so that she can learn more about herself. Like that's such a clever way to like get the exposition you need.
While you're going, let's jump in a whole different direction and tell us about Scrap.
Yes, Scrap is
this is a wild list, you guys, like the reading material for this.
So Scrap was one of the Wild Sentinels, like the Cassandra Nova Wild Sentinels, that was brought into Chicago during the Chris Claremont's Mechanics series, the one where Kitty Pryde is a college student in Chicago and there's like an anti-mutant group that is like causing trouble around Chicago. And
this is a pretty good read. It's a decent
It's Chris Claremont doing his Chris Claremont thing. It's fun to read. It's a little self-indulgent, but in a way that I always enjoy. But anyway, Scrap is the one surviving Wild Sentinel. When they're all destroyed at the end of the story, there's one that's found by the Purity, the anti-mutant group's leader, Alice Tremaine, and she takes it with her. And that's just kind of a cliffhanger. That's where the story leaves. In 2022, Chris Claremont comes back to write another throwback series to only this time to the Extreme X-Men, where there's all kinds of stuff going on. Ogun's trying to take over Kitty Pryde. There's all kinds of people trying to attack the X-Men show up. It's a big X-Men story in Chicago. And one of the plots is that Alice Tremaine has been using the Wild Sentinel she picked up and repaired at the end of Mechanics that she's now called Scrap, and is trying to get it to absorb mutant energy so that it can like send out a pulse that kills all mutants. And they're trying to use Rachel Summers for this and it doesn't work and ends up causing a depowering wave instead of a like killing wave. So like all the mutants lose their powers and it comes down to like them having to work together to take it down. But Scrap is interesting. He doesn't look like a regular Sentinel. It's one of the Wild Sentinels, which are all like amalgus and weirdly shaped. It's kind of octopus-like. It's got tentacles coming out of it. It's floating around. It seems to change size between issues, but that might just be Salvador LaRocca's drawing style, because in one issue it looks like a dog, like the size of a dog next to Alistair Maiden, and then another issue it's like way big enough that Storm and Kitty can like phase into it and like be inside it. So like
the fact that this is a Claremont story is the most wild thing. This like sentient Wild Sentinel, I guess it's not quite sentient.
I do appreciate that all that time in between the first time writing it he goes back and revisits. I appreciate that about Claremont.
If there's one thing Claremont will do, he'll never let you forget one of his past stories. He's gonna bring everything back. We even get a Moira McTaggart's like grandfather who Kitty Pryde had a romance with in X-Men True Friends, like reference here during one of Ogun's like trips through her brain. Like he's gonna bring everything back if he can. Scrap is actually a little sentient, I think. Scrap at least has opinions on what his name is. Pronouns are like kind of a thing because people use different pronouns for Scrap. The narration always uses he in quotation marks. Scrap has like seems to have some kind of opinions and thoughts on things and enough of a like sentience that Ogun ends up taking over Scrap and like possessing Scrap at the end of the story, which results in Scrap getting destroyed.
Scrap's one of the ones I'm most fond of. He's a little cutie. Rover's cuter than Scrap, though, I think. Justin, tell us about Core Command.
Yes, Core Command. Turns out Core Command only had one appearance, that being Uncanny X-Men Volume 4, number 15. Psylocke used intel she gathered while on Magneto's team to take down threats that the X-Men haven't dealt with. One of them included Core Command and its Omega Sentinel Enclave. What happened and how did it end? The Sentinel was found and dismantled by Psylocke. All of this happened on one page. Trying to find this story was a bit of a challenge, but because I'm like, it had more than one appearance, right? But no, just the one appearance. So Core Command was a techno-organic robot being semi-mechanical and biological, and it could generate Omega and Prime Sentinels. Its appearance, it basically resembles ground beef with a robot face.
Gross.
It is stationary in place, can't move. Its destruction was pretty easy. It does utilize nano sentinels to construct these prime and omega sentinels, but again, it mostly just had the one appearance. All in all, for having a lot of function, just it was destroyed pretty easily.
The two sentinels I think that are mostly remembered outside of the Justin Seyfert one I mentioned are the ones that have been on X-Men teams. One of them is Cerebra. This is Forge's attempt to be Iron Man. You know how Iron Man will create like AIs that learn, and then they'll like get their own armor for a while with like Boss or Pepper or Jarvis. Like, this is Forge creates an AI named Cerebra, which is the name that Grant Morrison adapted Cerebro into. Cerebra is then implanted into a robot looking body, which that's a wild choice for an X-Men character. Like, let's put a member of our team, we could design it to look like anything we want, but let's house it in a sentinel and then make it like obnoxiously friendly so that it will teach all the mutants around it not to be afraid of sentinels. I don't understand Forge's motivation here, except maybe he just wanted to see if he could do it. Cerebra has like over 30 appearances. She runs around with like the Extraordinary X-Men team. She's with the team during the time when they're like in limbo. They're like living in the dimension of limbo for a period of time because of the M-Pox. She's there during the Inhumans War. And of course she is destroyed in the end by Emma Frost's Inhuman hunting sentinels. We'll talk about them a little later because that's a story too.
I mean, I guess work with what you got. If you got a bunch of broken sentinels laying around, they're advanced adaptable robots. If you can reprogram it to be useful, I guess. I don't know what his motivation would be in like trying to make mutants not scared of sentinels. Like
Office of National Emergency during the like M-Day, like let's put human piloted sentinels to watch over the mutants. Like that's a shitty thing to do. But when the mutants put a sentinel on their team, I'm also like, wait, what? This is a choice you made. The other one people often remember is Sentinel X, and this is in the Jean Grey leading the team during X-Men Red era. The X-Men are in India. The Indian Mutant Defense Force has like used a sentinel against mutants there. Trinary, who can control technology, takes the sentinel under her like control and command, redesigns it so that it's like a ship for a while. She like hollows it out and puts just a bunch of seats inside, and then she paints like rainbows on it and flowers and like makes it look all friendly. This is not a sentient sentinel, but it's part of the X-Men Red team that helps them like against Cassandra Nova and the Nano Sentinels or the Sentinites. We'll also talk about those a little bit later. I'm not hugely fond of this one either. It's an X-Men team trying to save the planet in a sentinel. I don't like it.
I do like that she personalized it, added a little flair, little sunshine and rainbows.
It's one of those things. You got a technopath mutant on the team. They're going to use the sentinel as a tool, whether it's Forge or Ashley Martin or whoever.
My single favorite sentinel in this category is Sentinel X42903. This is a character that appears in Ryan North's Squirrel Girl. Squirrel Girl gets into dating and she's on an app and she's starting to connect with people. And there's a montage of her going on a bunch of really bad dates. One of them is with a sentinel that is sentient. Squirrel Girl says, "I don't think I can date someone who is prejudiced against mutants." And he's like, "But it's my programming." And she just can't do it. So then it shows this sentinel like kicking a can down the road and thinking like, "Why am I also programmed for heartbreak?" And it comes back later to help her fight. I got to talk about this character with Sarah Century on her show also this month, so go hear hear our extremely detailed version of this story, but it's adorable. Justin, tell us about Nana.
Nana is an alternate universe sentinel who appears in Marvel Zombies Resurrection, Volume 2. It takes place on Earth 19121, where the corpse of Galactus reaches planet Earth carrying a cannibalistic virus, specifically the Respawned, which are zombie-like creatures infected by a parasitic race. These came from brood planting eggs in the corpse of Galactus. The parasites were submicrobial and shared a collective consciousness. So when they evaded a host, the host dies while the parasites controlled the body as a reanimated corpse, which is why Galactus is under control. Don't worry, this is the context for the Sentinel. Base Spider-Man and a ragtag group of heroes struggle to save survivors and uncover the truth behind Galactus and the Respawned. Nana is a part of the ragtag group. When the zombies began to swarm Nana when they're resisting, it decided to sacrifice itself by firing its arms at Galactus with the resistance on them while it let the zombies destroy the rest of its body. Nana's sacrifice wasn't in vain as its allies were able to put an end to the Respawned. A month later, the resistance, Valeria and her friend Viv began working on rebuilding Nana as she was destroyed.
And Justin, I know that this is a character that you would love. Tell us about the She-Sentinel. She-Sentinel shall She-Shore by the She-Shore.
She appeared in Wolverine in the X-Men number 29. This issue has Wolverine holding a speech at the school and they bury a time capsule with objects. She-Sentinel appears 25 years later in the future where Wolverine is still headmaster. The school is now thriving, but the time capsule that was buried reminds him of certain sad events he hopes to prevent by accessing time technology. Logan finally sends a key back in time to the present time, and present Wolverine finds the key when burying the time capsule. So a little paradox here. With it, he opens the box that was Dog Logan's and finds two paper boats that he and Dog used to play with when they were children. So I guess this is more a Dog Logan story, but She-Sentinel appeared as a student at the school for higher learning. She is a candidate for Homecoming Queen. Other nominees also include Rose Logan and Summer Gray, although we never find out who win.
I kind of want like She-Sentinel to be like the daughter of Cerebra in the future. She's kind of cute, right?
She is. Like I said, I'm fascinated by her. She basically looks like a human-sized sentinel just wearing an X logo baseball cap, and I am rooting for her. But she probably lost to Summer Gray because Summer Gray just seems like a Gray winning prom queen just makes sense with my fantasy.
In this same era, we also have a future version of Shogo Lee, the son of Jubilee, who's on the X-Men in an Iron Man suit and calls himself Sentinel X. Totally different character. We're not going to talk about it, but that's also from this era. Theo, tell us about Alpha.
Yeah, so Alpha's probably the most sentient of all the Sentinels I have to cover. Alpha is also a pretty recent one. He's from the X-Men Gold series. Alpha was a experimental nanotech that in a vial that Gambit stole
from a Trask.
Well, no, he stole it for a Trask.
Oh, pardon me. Yes.
Yeah, he stole it for Olivia Trask, who says she's the granddaughter of Bolivar. But it turns out he was really just trying to figure out what she wanted, so he had like stole it as like a cover. But when she turns on him, as you would expect, the vial breaks open and the nanites get into her computer. And she had said that she wasn't actually looking to build sentinels because there's no money in it, and she really wanted to just make weapons. For some reason, once it gets into her computer, it finds an AI for a sentinel programming and ends up turning itself into a sentinel. Alpha's basically a sentinel made of like microscopic nanotech swarms, so it could make multiple bodies of itself. It can do all kinds of, turn itself into different shapes, have all kinds of different powers, can't really be physically destroyed.
Like a relatively formidable threat for the X-Men.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Alpha's kind of a real big deal. But Alpha also mutates, another example of a Sentinel claiming that they're mutating. And mutates enough that Alpha's vulnerable to psychic attack. So like Rachel's able to like shut all of Alpha's forms down with like a massive psychic attack that knocks her out as well. But he comes back later having like evolved further and teams up with Lydia Nance, who's like the overarching villain of X-Men Gold. She's a anti-mutant. I think she's a little more like a Reverend Stryker. Like she's a big anti-mutant TV personality who like goes on and talks a lot about like what a threat mutants are to humanity and things like that. She teams up with Alpha, who's like evolved even further and is even more of a threat and they form a plan to like wipe out mutants with the remains of the legacy virus and Colossus's blood, and they like have a nanotech swarm that's gonna like deliver this to the whole world, but they get thwarted. Nance gets picked up, and the X-Men stage a trap where they leave Iceman guarding Lydia Nance in her jail cell, expecting Alpha to come and like try and free her, and he does, and Iceman freezes him in a block of ice. They figure that'll keep all the nanotech there controlled. But the last scene is them talking about how they think they got all of Alpha's nanotech trapped, and another Alpha body is like watching the prison from the outside and then floats away in a cloud of nanotech and has never come back since. So
I have read X-Men Gold. I did not remember this character, and he's a pretty formidable like
sentinel level threat. Did either of you remember that Alpha existed?
Nope. I completely forgot about Alpha until
I remember Lydia Nance. Yeah, this is a cool story, and Alpha's another villain that's just out there. It's a big sentinel. We can team him up with Cynthia Chalmers.
He's out there and the X-Men don't know that he is because they think they caught him.
Fantastic. But also they caught him, so where's that now? Like, where's that story?
Yeah.
And then in a much lighter one, tell us about Iron Punisher, Theo.
So Iron Punisher is kind of like the Squirrel Girl sentinel. He's sentient because of he was a part of a group of sentinels that got destroyed by the Uncanny Avengers, and for some reason Scarlet Witch's powers gave him a level of sentience. So he decided, and he was horrified at watching his fellow sentinels be destroyed, so he decided to model himself after Punisher and go after all superhumans. So he like gives himself a paint job to be all black and gray, and gives himself like shoulder weapons like War Machine, and starts going after superhumans. And for some reason decides to start by going after Howard the Duck and Howard the Duck's best friend and frequent like co-star Bev Switzler. And
like they work to give this guy a backstory.
Mm-hmm. There's a running thing throughout this Howard the Duck series. It's a really good series, by the way, the 2016 Howard the Duck series. There's these aliens who are very much supposed to be the writers of the book, who are manipulating all this stuff to try and create a story around Howard the Duck, and is like comes into conflict with Mojo and all that. So like a lot of the villains Howard faces throughout this are really like being manipulated by these aliens, and Iron Punisher is one of them. So he's being sent after Howard the Duck and gets beaten the first time because there's this character Scout who's like a Silver Surfer type character who's friends with Howard, who comes in and like destroys them, and they just leave. They don't even like bother to worry about it. Iron Punisher comes back later to try and like fight all superhumans, ends up fighting Spider-Man, tries to eat Spider-Man at one point, just throws Spider-Man in his mouth and tries to chew on him, but then gets distracted by Biggs the cat, Howard the Duck's cat, and ends up finding out that his new sentience also involves loving cats. So he just gets distracted and pets Biggs the whole time. And his final scene, they give him his own cat, and he just walks off into the sunset with his cat and decides that having a cat is much more important than destroying superhumans. And that's the last we see of him.
Iron Punisher,
relatable
character, just out there.
Yeah.
Relatable content.
let me just say how impressed I am with you both. You came with your homework done. This is fantastic. I just get to ride. This is great. I'm going to keep going with a weird story. These don't have names, but these are sentient sentinels. In Wolverine 73, 74, and you'll notice, listeners who are unfamiliar with X-Men content, we're not trying to set these stories up for you in like continuity. We're just telling you what happened. So Wolverine and Jubilee end up in the Reavers base, and one of the broken sentinels there repairs itself and then develops sentience. We don't really understand why, but it becomes aware of the wonders of its own existence in the cosmos, and it starts like waxing philosophical. Now mutated by like Spiral's crazy technology, the sentinel seizes control of one of Gateway's portals and is determined to pass through it to find the best world that exists for sentinels out there. They end up back at the Anthill, the base in Australia, and the sentinel names itself 3.14159, like after pi. So I guess it does have a name. It has a purpose now, it has emotions, and it ends up activating a bunch of other sentinels to be free. It quickly plays out that 3.14 considers himself superior to them. He initially plans to block out the sun again to do the sterilization thing, but after facing the potential of his own death, he decides to go back into sleep mode while calculating the world's biggest problems. He estimates he'll wake up in about 2,000 years. This is a crazy story happening in the middle of a lot of Wolverine insanity, but this sentient sentinel is another one that's out there. Super obscure. This is one of those stories that's so crazy, it's almost hard to find. There's another one, but an X-Men Annual 96. The X-Men are playing baseball and a Sentinel approaches that has become sentient and like wants to come and be their friend. And they end up attacking it and it dies. I'm oversimplifying the story, but it's another one of those like, oh my God, that cute little Sentinel flew to the X-Men's mansion and then they destroyed it. Oh, that's so sad. Lots of crazy ones. The last one I'll cover here in this category is Sentin Ally. Sentin Ally is a Grace Freud character from the recent run on X-Men Infinity, where we meet that whole team of trans and non-binary heroes that are gathering at like the Matt Baker house. There's a guy named Mitch who builds himself some like repurposed Sentinel armor, and he wants to be an ally to the mutant trans kids. So he calls himself the Sentin Ally. He paints a peace sign and a rainbow flag on his armor, but they end up attacking him. And that's the only context we have for this little weirdo. Bravo, Grace Freud. It's a lot of fun. And then let's jump over to Justin for one people will know much more from recent comics, the Mother Mold.
I appreciate the intent with Sentin Ally.
I mean, that's the point. That's the point of the story.
Good intent for execution.
you're doing it wrong and we beat you up.
So Mother Mold. Mother Mold was an artificial intelligence developed by Orchis and a next generation Master Mold Sentinel designed to create other Master Molds on an industrial scale. It is believed to be the precursor to Nimrod. So Mother Mold made its first appearance in the Krakoa era, RIP, first mentioned in House of X, before it made its actual debut a couple issues later. So the X-Men learned of Master Mold through Mystique, Toad, and Sabretooth after they successfully received data about it. Fearing the Sentinel's development could lead to the creation of the Nimrod, which was later confirmed in X-Men 6, the X-Men were dispatched to destroy Mother Mold before it came online. The X-Men were successful in freeing three of the four callers holding Mother Mold in place to the Orcus Forge, but Mystique, who was supposed to free the final one, was sucked into space by Orchis before she could. And this forced Nightcrawler to teleport Wolverine out into the final caller so he could slice it away with his claws in order to release Mother Mold. Wolverine was successful, though it cost him and Nightcrawler their lives. The infamous story where the whole team died. Mother Mold came online and condemned both humans and mutants just as it fell into the sun.
This is a very recent Hickman story, obviously. It's very intense and it has a lot of repercussions. What are your thoughts as we finish category one on the kind of lumping all of these together? How are you guys feeling?
So I did give Mother Mold a rating. It's the only one that got 5 out of 5 stars. I labeled it as cool, brilliant, incredible, amazing, show-stopping, spectacular, never the same, totally unique, completely not ever been done before, unafraid to reference or not reference, put it in a blender, eat it, give birth to it. She is mother.
I've been thinking as we go through, we started off early talking about the idea of like Sentinels on the X teams and things like that. I think it's really interesting the idea that like a lot of the ideas in X-Men, one of the reoccurring things is about redemption and characters coming in, like a lot of villains end up joining the X-Men and things like that. The difference between like a villain who was just like a mutant trying to make their own way and a villain who was like created to kill mutants as an act of like prejudice and genocide, and like where that sentience comes to a point of letting a Sentinel have like an act of redemption, whether it's being she Sentinel, being a part of the student body, or like obviously ones like Big Bot or so on are just Sentinels. They have no higher thought beyond killing mutants, but others have this option of making their own choices and going against their programming. And like,
this is why I started the conversation with the reminder of the three types of robot stories, because all of these are Sentinels as cute pets, Sentinels that develop sentience, and like how we feel about their choices to be heroes or villains. You know, Alpha's journey is very different than Cerebra's. They're characters. And even though they look the same and come from the same place, these are individual characters in the database.
It is kind of fascinating how a lot of these could be revisited in the future, but haven't been. There's the potential for future stories, which again, I appreciate Claremont for doing that little bit of a throwback with Scrap. So
yeah, and Roy Thomas doing the number two story with the Cynthia Chalmers one years later. You know, it's fun to see those deep dives.
Yeah, it's just fascinating how much potential there is with a lot of these and how like they could appear again. It's just a matter of when.
So category number two, this one will be a little faster. This is like Sentinels with paint jobs. This is where we get Sentinels who were programmed for death and genocide, and they're being used as tools, but every once in a while we get a new paint job or a new like little upgrade. This is where we think, what would it be like to have a Sentinel? And also, it's Iron Man. Let's make Stark Sentinels in the most recent Orcus comics, right? We make it appear slightly different each time. And we do talk about this in the Sentinels 101 episode. How every time the Sentinels come back, we have to find like new color schemes, new ways to make them scary. But it's always that like looming robot with the glowing eyes on the corner, right? So some of these looks are really wild. Let's begin at a weird place with the ISO 8 Sentinels. For those of you that played Marvel Avengers Alliance back in the day, this was the Facebook game that had ISO 8 in it. And I played that for like 1,000 fucking hours over a couple years of my life. I loved that game.
ISO 8 is the across the board currency, basically, for all of Marvel's mobile games. I think it started in Contest of Champions or Avengers Alliance or whatnot, but it's in all of them now. Any of these games, if you play them, if you upgrade something, you're using ISO 8. They eventually brought it into the comics as kind of a, almost like a proto Mysterium. It's like the super material that like you can use for all kinds of different energy sources or building crazy things. The Sentinel Mark ISO is what they call themselves, are Sentinels that ended up in the game, in the world of Contest of Champions, Earth 517, because all these games have their own Earth designations as well. And they adapted to using ISO 8 as their like power source. There's not really that much more to them.
We're just going to keep going actually here. Justin, tell us about the Blockbuster Sentinels.
So Blockbuster Sentinels appeared in Uncanny X-Men number 10 and 11 post AVX, attacking Cyclops and his team at a rally. During the battle with the X-Men, the Sentinel disintegrates after it is attacked by Magneto, returning to where it came from. In an unknown facility elsewhere, more Sentinels can be seen standing in rows. A figure in a spacesuit like outfit stands over a table examining the remains of the Sentinel. The dark figure is later revealed to be Dark Beast. I am fascinated by the Blockbuster Sentinel just because it has a drastically different appearance from previous Sentinel models. It has a glowing green head that almost resembles an extraterrestrial being. Its body is definitely differently designed as well, looking a little more slender and a little more streamlined compared to previous models as well.
This is also in the era, well, around the era when SHIELD had a group of Sentinels. This was a big plot line in Brian Michael Bendis's like Uncanny X-Men relaunch, where, you know, like Dazzler was like the mutant liaison to SHIELD and Mystique took her place. If you guys remember that whole era, the SHIELD Sentinels kind of look the same, but they're being repurposed to serve the government. Tell us about the Archaea Sentinels, Justin.
So the Archaea Sentinels were, they back made to, their debut.
Back to Sublime, but this time it's his kid sister.
They made their debut in X-Men Volume 4, Number 9, where the story played out in 10, 11, and 12 with gorgeous art by Clay Mann. This was a backup story to the main arc involving Archaea and the Sisterhood. So as the Archaea meteorite crashed down to Earth, chunks of infected rock landed all over the planet, reviving some sunken old Sentinels from the bottom of the ocean. This caused them to attack Catalina Island, where Jubilee, Bling, Mercury, and a swimsuit-clad Hellion jump into action, and Cypher and Quentin Quire remain nearby as air support. The Sentinels are inevitably destroyed, cleanup was organized, and Hellion was never seen in this uniform again, despite Jubilee's suggestion to make the trunks mandatory, much to Quentin Quire's disapproval. So these Sentinels were just scrap, almost zombie Sentinels, where they look like regular Sentinels, just beat up, weathered, rusted, and aged. Nothing really setting them apart from previous models, just...
Why did you look at me when you said beat up, rusted, and aged? Rude.
I'm just looking at the camera. But yeah, all in all, these Sentinels were merely the side plot and destroyed no problem. Their impact was minimal, and their goal outside destruction and being a distraction was unclear.
So what was your rating on those?
So my rating on those was 2 out of 5 stars.
And on the Blockbusters?
The Blockbusters, they got 3 out of 5 stars.
Okay. I'm going to keep us going with Chip Zdarsky and Terry Dodson's X-Men Fantastic Four limited series from the Krakoa era, where we go to Latveria and Doom's trying to get involved in like the mutant shit by setting up like a mutant island. He also has like mutant X-Men running around in the current comics. But you know, the Fantastic Four and the X-Men have to work with each other because it turns out Doom has repainted some Sentinels to look like Doombots. So he's like upgraded their technologies. Now we have a Doombot Sentinels. There's something about these like the green hoods in these designs. It's so weird to me. Doombots are a classic design, but in a Sentinel form, it's a very, very odd combination. We also, right before Krakoa, have a couple of Sentinels introduced in the Matt Rosenberg era of Uncanny X-Men, which is like the deadly one where everyone's dying. Age of X-Men's happening right around this time. First, we have the Reaver Sentinels. This is the Office of National Emergency building some Sentinels based off of Bastion's designs, but Donald Pierce found a way to take them over and mix them with Reaver tech. And we have Reaver Sentinels, and they are used in battle with Havoc's like flop X-Men team from Astonishing X-Men. Later, they come back in the Office of National Emergency. First, there's the limited series New Mutants Dead Souls, where our core team, the cliffhanger is that they've all been infected by the transmode virus and they're in the control of ONE. So that's picked up in Uncanny X-Men Volume 5. The big bad guy here is the leader of the place, who is an anti-mutant, terrible person, Robert Callahan, and he is using his position of power to try to kill all mutants. He has the infected New Mutants and he like puts them inside of Sentinels to give them like transmode Sentinels that have mutants in them. Transmode virus is one of my least favorite things about X-Men comics. I get it, but it keeps getting used. The Phalanx and the Technarchy and Warlock and like Cable's arm, and it just it goes on and on forever, it feels like sometimes.
It comes up in my next story. But basically Machine Man X-51, Aaron Stack, he's a character who's been around for a while. His whole thing is that he was built by Dr. Abel Stack to be a human robot. He's supposed to think like a human, feel like a human, act like a human, but he has all kinds of robotic gadgets and powers, and he could fly via like anti-gravity tech and things like that.
I love Machine Man. I love this character.
He's great. Like, I really like this character. And Machine Man has some really interesting parallels with the X-Men that like come to a head in these stories.
And listeners, if you're familiar with my show, go back to my first interview with Carl Ballers, who wrote this series. I asked him about this. Basically, they were kind of trying to make Machine Man happen. So he came up with a pitch that would connect Machine Man to the X-Men. And like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants shows up here. There's a whole bunch of X-Men content in this series. It's weird. There's a lot of Sentinel shit too.
It's not even that hard. Like, he has his own like Robert Kelly. He has his own, like, he's a character whose entire thing is that he's hated and feared for being a robot when he just wants to be a person. So like the X-Men connection is really easy to like make there. And the way this story does it is that in 1998 they did a bunch of annuals where they like crossed over characters, and like you get like normal pairings of characters, and then you get Cable, Machine Man, and Machine Man and Bastion. So like they just kind of threw it all in, and basically
this is the Bastion revelation. This is where we learn that the Siege Perilous thing happened. Like it is written by Carl Ballers.
Yeah, Bastion's backstory is revealed in a Machine Man annual. Machine Man is basically captured by the remains of Master Bold and is trying to be turned into Sentinel Supreme. And they succeed. They turn Machine Man into a Sentinel that ends up fighting Cable. And they upgrade him with all kinds of Sentinel tech. He suddenly has all these new powers, as well as a destroy all mutants thing. But through the techno-organic virus, Cable's able to like telepathically connect with Machine Man and is able to like bring his humanity out. So he's able to like overpower his anti-mutant programming and remember like that he's a hero and that who he is as Aaron Stack. Not long after this, he ends up teaming up with the X-Men, where he basically sacrifices his life to like save a bunch of SHIELD agents who had captured him earlier. He like flies off to go like stabilize the ship, and all the SHIELD agents are like, oh no, he's abandoning us. And Colossus just goes, he just risked his life to save you, and you guys immediately distrust him the second he does anything you don't like recognize. And like Colossus starts like lecturing these SHIELD agents about like their bigotry. They really like lay on the like connection between like the bigotry towards Machine Man as an artificial life form and the bigotry towards mutants. And he ends up sacrificing his life to save both mutants and humans.
We just talked on my show about the early Avengers, where Vision is, and how Vision's involvement on the team is very much an allegory of race. He's the red man made of plastic that has to be like a credit to all robots. This is that type of story again.
This is all done through like the annuals at the time and through some X-Men stories. But then you mentioned before, the X-51 series starts, and that starts with Machine Man coming back to life because it bonds with a life model decoy that had been like discarded. And he's got like all these new powers. He's got these crazy like gravity powers now that he can use. He's really upgraded. And this happens while the Brotherhood of Mutants is trying to steal his head. So like he comes out with all this like Sentinel like programming in his head, this anti-mutant Sentinel programming that he just like like makes short work of the Brotherhood right off the bat.
And Fantasia is there.
Then he like starts to remember who he is. And then the rest of the series is just him trying to be a hero who like likes and respects the X-Men. But he's also got this like Sentinel programming that's telling him he needs to like destroy all mutants going on in his head. It's a really good series. And it really endeared Machine Man to me in a way that I hadn't really given him a lot of thought before.
It ties over a lot with, I think it's Louise Simonson's Warlock series as well, which is the Duglock character riding around with like a transmode girl and a monkey.
There's also the Deathlock series at the same time, and all three of those kick off right from X-Men Annual 1999, which is where the story I mentioned before of him saving the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and all that, like the three
like,
of those.
It's like I think they call it the M-Tech line or something like that.
Yeah, the event is called Rage Against the Machine, which I thought was really funny.
There is ties between Machine Man and Sentinels at the end of this series as well, when they redesign a bunch of Sentinels to look like Machine Man.
He ends up just going into space with the Celestials at the end and like removing them from the situation entirely, essentially.
Tell us about the AIM Sentinels as well.
On the entirely other end of the spectrum, the AIM Sentinels show up basically for like three panels and get destroyed. In the Domino's Hotshot series, there's this whole race from all these different countries are trying to acquire this like Celestial tech that's been mutating people into giving them Celestial power when they touch it or touch people who have been like infected by it. AIM is one of the organizations that's trying to acquire this tech. So they send three AIM Sentinels, which are just Sentinels made to look like the AIM beekeeper suits, which is great. So all these characters are like suddenly cornered by these three giant AIM Sentinels. And Domino has an interesting little like an internal monologue about how she and Outlaw, the two mutants in the whole group, have like this instinctive moment of panic whenever they see Sentinels that just doesn't affect the rest of it, because like Black Widow's there and White Fox and a bunch of other characters. It doesn't matter too much because it turns out Outlaw's been affected by the Celestial tech and she grows super huge and destroys the Sentinels in like one swipe. AIM is getting in on the game of trying to create their own Sentinels, apparently.
In Young X-Men number 11, we get another alternate future. This is the conclusion of the Dust storyline that's happening at the time. Dust got like turned into glass and now it made her go crazy and she might destroy the planet. This is like where Gray Malkin and Cypher show up. So we're in a far future where there's like only a few mutants left, and there's a 10th generation Sentinel called Sentinex who are hunting down the people who remain, which is like Anol, Gray Malkin, Wolverine, and Emma Frost using the name Diamondheart, which I kind of am okay with, especially in her older years. They're living on the island nation of Xaveria, like Xavier with an A at the end. Justin, tell us about the Onslaught Sentinels. Here's the first time an X-Man decided, let's paint a Sentinel and make it look like me.
So I know Onslaught gets a lot of hate, but it was one of the first like storylines that I did read. Basically, during Onslaught, he acquired the Mark VI Sentinels to occupy New York City. X-Factor failed to stop their launch that was covered in Onslaught Impact versus the Phases. And these Sentinels were to initiate panic so Onslaught could siphon their psychic energy from the terrified citizens and transmit it directly to himself, making him more powerful. The Sentinels were also used to block all exits to New York City. The Sentinels were programmed to eliminate anyone else who opposed Onslaught, which included Spider-Man, Green Goblin, and Punisher. So a lot of that Onslaught Impact covered these heroes, anti-heroes, villains fighting the Sentinels. After Onslaught was defeated, many of the destroyed Sentinels were seen being cleaned up from the streets, mostly in Amazing Spider-Man. In Uncanny X-Men, Bastion took charge of the Sentinel facility that housed these Sentinels.
An interesting thing about these guys, this is when Heroes Reborn was going to launch, right? So all of Marvel's long-running books, like Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, were all being canceled. And all of the end of the volume ones of these series, the characters are fighting Sentinels because they look like Onslaught and Onslaught's the event. So Fantastic Four 416, which is the end of volume one, it's got like Sentinels prominently featured in it. So does Spider-Man and these other titles. It's really interesting.
The Amazing Spider-Man story where he faces Sentinels was one of my first Spider-Man books. But getting back to the factory, the Sentinels were considered outdated by Bastion, which was foreshadowing for what would eventually be Operation Zero Tolerance. So I gave these Sentinels 4 out of 5. They're reliable, they're classic. While there is nothing unique about their appearance, they are streamlined, factory-ready model, good enough to replicate and flood New York's streets with. While they may not bring anything unique to the table, they were effective in initiating panic and blocked all exits to the city. They were a general nuisance, and they had a job and, you know, did it effectively.
And then in one of the most hated X-Men stories ever, there's that time Emma Frost made Inhuman Hunting Sentinels, which is woof. It's a rough era, guys. Justin, tell us about that one.
Flashback flashbacks to. So IVX was when I quit reading the books before House of X got back into them.
You and a lot of people.
So with that said, the Inhuman Hunting Sentinels made their first and only appearance in IVX number 6. There were 4 made in total. After the Inhuman Queen Medusa purged the Earth's atmosphere of Terrigen, the Inhuman Hunting Sentinels were activated by Emma Frost and attacked the Analix Zeppelins surrounding the area, killing the Inhumans on board. In anticipation for the war between the Inhumans and mutants, Emma Frost used her psychic powers to make Forge build a set of sentinels designed solely to exterminate humans. They were destroyed by the Inhumans and the X-Men while Emma Frost made her escape and have not appeared since. So they do have...
That's a rough version of Emma Frost for me.
Yeah. They do have the standard sentinel capabilities. They just hunted Inhumans. But for having such a small appearance, they did kill a lot of Inhumans.
Yeah.
So mission accomplished.
Stay tuned for the trial of Emma Frost in like 3 years on my show.
Yes.
We'll get there eventually. I love her, but this is a rough era.
What I appreciate about these Sentinels is they're very on brand for Emma Frost being white in color. I'm not sure if that was on purpose or not.
Good old Diamond Heart. Emma's not the only one, because if you don't remember, Cyclops also programmed some Sentinels one time. This is a weird place in Avengers Volume 5, number 38. It's a Hickman story back when like Cannonball and Sunspot were big on the team. The X-Men are in Nation X, and Cyclops is in his military general era before he gets the Phoenix Force and like kills Xavier with it. He has a Phoenix egg he's bragging about, and he has put some Sentinels out front to stand guard just for fun, to like warn people away. And again, for someone who lived through the Sentinel Squad 1 era, for this man to just park Sentinels on the front lawn is bizarre to me. There's also a weird story. Bastion has a lot of strange versions of his character over the years. So there's a story in X-Men Blue. This is the time traveling X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold era. Bastion has realized, even though he was just trying to destroy mutants with like future Sentinels and Nimrods during the Messiah Complex, his programming now dictates that mutants need to be preserved because he recognizes they're going to die out because they're an endangered species. And so now he's decided we need to protect the X-Men instead. So he just keeps sending some Sentinels in to like interfere, and the X-Men are like, holy fuck, there's Sentinels. And they're like, no, we're here to save you. It's weird. Then Bastion gets involved in the Mother Vine story, and I'm just not going there right now. The last one in this category is the Kilgore Sentinels. Tell us about those, Theo.
Speaking of stories people don't particularly love, there's a Cade Kilgore was one of a group of like 14 year olds who took over the Hellfire Club during Wolverine and the X-Men. There's a lot to like about that book, but the tween Hellfire Club is a little rough. Cade Kilgore is a teenage billionaire weapons dealer who creates a group of his own version of Sentinels. And during the AVX era, there's an issue where he's walking a bunch of like bigwigs through his factory and introducing them to different types, including Mark 10, which is a collapsible suitcase Sentinel that's like a human-sized Sentinel that can collapse, as I'm sure you could figure out. The Mark 11, which is a transformable all-terrain tank Sentinel. The Mark 12, which are nanobot Sentinels, which are like a swarm of killer bee Sentinels. And the Mark 13, which is, he describes his version of the Tri-Sentinel with a miniaturized nuclear reactor as a power source. And he sells a bunch of these to these government officials and billionaires and whatnot who are at their... who were at this meeting only for the Phoenix powered X-Men Phoenix 5 to show up and just destroy them all. And that's the last we see of all of Kilgore Sentinels.
I'm actually kind of fond of Cade Kilgore. I think it's a terrible, amazing version of the Hellfire Club. So that's a whole era, guys. And there's a lot we're not covering here, by the way. We covered the Tri-Sentinel in another episode, but we see, by the way, Sentinel Technologies like actively involved in the creation of Phantom X and like the Stepford Cuckoo, because it's used in the world. There's a whole bunch of Sentinels from all kinds of futures, like 2099 and House of M, that are different variants that I just didn't put on this list because they have a lot of appearances. There's a bunch of isolated Sentinel stories. There's the time that Dr. Metalis sent Sentinels after the Morlocks in the Chicago tunnels. There's the time the military sent Sentinels against Kang the Conqueror, but he took them over and like sent them back to fight the military. There's the time Mystique was fighting Sentinels in like Russia and Cuba in different colors. There's the time Madison Jeff Jeffries built an army of Sentinels for Malcolm Colcord during Weapon X. And he also had a little one that Madison Jeffries kept that he named Bot. That falls into the pet list. There's also a lot of Sentinels that we've covered elsewhere, right? Like we've talked about Griffin and other storylines, but I guarantee it was not comprehensive enough. There's way more out there that I don't know about. This is a concept people come back to again and again and again and again and again. Justin and Theo, thoughts on Section 2, the repainted Sentinel?
Well, this is something I definitely overprepared for, but better overprepared than underprepared. It's just fascinating to see the different models and the different ways these Sentinels are adapted. Like there's a few that have like bio capabilities and aren't just strictly mechanical. We got nanites, just the different technology used and the evolution of the models is just fascinating to see, and how not only the mutants adapt, but how Sentinel technology adapts to the mutants adapting. It's just a constant back and forth.
And there's definitely a thing about these Sentinels where it seems like they must be advanced enough, they must be powerful enough that like everybody wants a piece of them. Everyone wants to build their own version. Everybody wants their own like paint job on them. Every country, every Doctor Doom, AIM, Onslaught, everybody wants their own version of the Sentinel. And you kind of forget when they're just constantly like the X-Men are destroying Sentinels in the Danger Room scenes that they're actually a threat, and they're actually something that like is more effective as a killing machine, mostly as a killing machine, that all these organizations want their own.
The Sentinel is less recognizable than Iron Man, maybe the same amount of recognizable as Ultron, but they're definitely more recognizable than Doombots. Like that's how high they fall in the Marvel hierarchy. Let's go to our final category, and this is like the world threat of Sentinels. We've covered a lot of these in the other episodes, talked a lot about various tropes in the Sentinels 101 episode, the Wild Sentinels and the Prime Sentinels and Sentinel Squad ONE. So go listen to that episode for a more comprehensive review of their main storylines. The one I'll cover quickly here is Morrison introduced, along with the Wild Sentinels, something called Nano Sentinels or Sentinites. These are like little teeny tiny things that can reprogram shit. And they've basically been used in a few stories, one by Cassandra Nova for changing people's brain engrams to control their minds. One, these are used by Beast to make people sick. No joke. Beast has been a war criminal for a while, everybody. We also have a Cade Kilgore like using them in his tech. We mentioned that briefly. Lastly, we have Orcus using them in a recent issue of Astonishing Iceman to attack people. Orcus has also created a new version of Sentinels. We have Nimrod, and Nimrod's a big thing in the comics, right? And there's a bunch of Nimrod variants used in various places, like the Hounds and the Harvesters. I didn't include those on this list, but there are a lot of like mandroid versions of like Nimrod or the Sentinels used in various places, usually in government stories. The Orcus has also given us the Stark Sentinels, which look like Iron Man. There's currently a new Mysterium Sentinel being developed, which is like the metal used in X-Men Red from like the White Hot Room. We also get like a bunch of Wolverine corpses that have been weaponized, and they're called Sentinel Zeros. So there's a few, and again, I'm sure I missed some here, even in the Orcus stories. There's a lot. Theo, tell us about the Sentinauts in this category.
Okay, yeah. Have you talked about the Descendants already?
Nope.
Okay.
I saved it for you.
All right. So
I did mention it's amazing. I actually really like the story.
Oh, it's a really interesting story. But the Descendants, real quick, I'll try and condense a lot of information real quick here. After World War II, the British government wanted to create their own version of Jim Hammond, the Human Torch, Phineas Horton's synthesoid that burst into flame, the original Human Torch. He was a World War II hero. My favorite detail about him is he killed Hitler. So the British government commissioned these three scientists, codenamed Father, Mother, and Brother, to create these synthesoids. But they managed to create 20 of them, but they couldn't get them back to life. So Brother used a mystical artifact called the Orb of Necromancy to give life to these 20 synthesoids. Brother's later revealed to be Captain Britain's father, and he had stolen the Orb of Necromancy from Merlin. And then Mother decided to let them live their own life and freed them all and let them go out into the world. But this kind of spread, and scientist father became obsessed with this idea of these sentient like artificial life forms, and built this entire subterranean world called the Core, where he basically just collects sentient robots. And he's got robots who are based on Doombots, robots based off of Machine Man, based off of Sentinels, Adaptoids. At one point, there's a RoboCop in the crowd. But Deathlocks, LMDs, Vision, like any major robot or android or cyborg they've even got the Reavers working for them. Any major like mechanical being that exists in the Marvel universe is represented in this world. And they're trying to bring about like an age of artificial beings trying to supplant humanity. And Father's like obsessed with this story. And it's all kicked off because one of the original synthezoids that were brought to life via magic has had a kid, like has naturally given birth to a child who has like is supposed to have like incredible powers. But so the secret Avengers are dealing with this whole storyline.
It's highly hinted that Weapon Plus is what's behind all of this, which is also interesting.
Yeah, Father has, the scientist who's only ever called Father has like connections to Weapon Plus. So it's a whole thing, but like the master mold is now living in the core and working for Father. Like all these different like robots are here now, and one of the like factions of robots are the Sentinauts, which are sentient robots based off of the works of Bolivar Trask, and they don't do much. They're just kind of like there as part of the crowd, but the whole Descendant storyline is really interesting, and all these robots are considered sentient, and it all ends when the original Human Torch, Jim Hammond, destroys the Orb of Necromancy, the magic artifact that gave them life, and every sentient robot in the core basically just drops dead. So that's basically the end of them, except they do come back later when Hank Pym in the graphic novel Rage of Ultron, where Father and a handful of them come back to life inexplicably, and then Hank Pym kills them all again.
It sounds like you really enjoyed The Descendants, Theo.
I did. It's a story I've read before. Revisiting it was a lot of fun. There's a lot going on in it. It's Rick Remender, and he does all kinds of like big ideas in his stories.
Yeah, Captain Britain's there. There's a bunch of X characters in this story. It's great. Go read it. And then Justin, will you tell us about the Bio-Sentinels? This one's real fucking scary.
This one was interesting. So the Bio-Sentinels made their first appearance and only appearance in the Exogenetic storyline in Astonishing X-Men. So this story, the Sentinel was first presented in the form of deceased mutant Laurie Collins, also known as Wallflower, before transforming into an organic Sentinel and attacking the X-Men. Once that was defeated, the second Bio-Sentinel, likely created from some of the remains of the island of Krakoa, was not sent to attack the X-Men, but retrieve the first Sentinel to prevent the X-Men from examining it. But after the X-Men defeated the Sentinels, the X-Men assumed some craft would have to come and retrieve both fallen units. And when that actually happened, the X-Men basically stuck on to the ship cloaked. When it appeared, the craft unknowingly brought the X-Men to a facility belonging to a mutant known as Kaga, where they confronted him. Rather than exacting revenge on Kaga, the X-Men ensured that he would receive the best possible medical care until he died of natural causes instead of exacting revenge. Before departing, the X-Men activated the facility's self-destruct, ending the threat of Kaga's Bio-Sentinels. Kaga does have a bit of a tragic backstory. So Kaga was introduced and he hated the X-Men because they were beautiful. That's the short version. Mutant himself, Kaga's mutations deformed him from birth as a result of his mother having survived the atomic blast that destroyed Hiroshima. Kaga's mutation also granted him enhanced intelligence. So by the age of 16, he was creating advanced technology through front companies, earning him enough wealth to fund medical processes that kept his failing body alive. As a master geneticist, Kaga began acquiring DNA from living mutants and mutant corpses, providing him genetic material for creating an army. One of the mutants he acquired was the former New Hellion called Paradigm. I was really gagged to see him appear in the story first time around I read this, who had been transformed by the Phalanx virus into a techno-organic life form. Using Paradigm, Kaga managed to hack into the computer files of Beast, who post-M-Day was researching the harvesting of X-genes from dead mutants to repopulate the species. Together with DNA acquired from the brood, Kaga created Bio-Sentinels from the corpses of these fallen mutants, transforming them into reanimated, super-powered automatons.
This is a crazy story, right?
Yes. And what's interesting with the Bio-Sentinels is they were equipped with brood clones that shot like missiles from their fingertips. Aside from that, they just showed mutant detection, and I don't believe they could fly. I gave it 3 out of 5. The Sentinels were not very effective overall. These Sentinels look like a standard Sentinel with a fleshy appearance. appearance, which makes it more grotesque in appearance. And I think it honestly adds to what would otherwise be your standard Sentinel. I'm disgusted yet intrigued. And while these Sentinels were not very effective, it did traumatize Emma Frost slightly.
This has been crazy. So where my brain is going, go back to the early 2000s. I am new on the Marvel Handbooks team, and they would send out this spreadsheet. Here's the characters we're covering in this book. And people would pick which characters they thought they could handle. You weren't paid very well. You could sign up for 4 pages or 40, right? When you open these books, it lists the writers in terms of who wrote the most in each one. And there was a few books where I was the head writer on. One of the earliest entries I got, I think it was 3 pages, was on the Shi'ar, which meant I had to go read every Shi'ar story. There's a lot of X-Men stories, but the Shi'ar show up in a lot of like random places. There's a ship running through something in Silver Surfer, or there's some random character at a bar in space. It was my job to read every one of those, because at the beginning of these, you'd have to have a list of like known members, and it would list the name of every Shi'ar ever mentioned in any comic book. I did this again for the Guardsmen, for the Imperial Guard. This episode feels like writing one of those entries. This is the comprehensive check all of the boxes of every Sentinel that appeared in every random spot ever, and we still didn't cover them all. My editor would be like, nope, you still missed some. What are your thoughts as we're concluding this wild ride of random ass Sentinels? Theo?
I mean, this is the kind of thing I just do for fun. I just go through, I just pick a category and go through and make lists and like... So like this is a lot of fun to get this like larger picture of where they can range from everything from just mindless giant robots to like these deep stories about
puppies.
Yeah. I think you have to dig into the like the weird and obscure things to get the full picture sometimes on like these types of characters. And I really enjoy that.
Where can people find you online, Theo?
I'm on most social medias at Rock Throwing Band.
You're so fun to nerd out with, Matt. It's so great to see you.
So this does feed into my need to go down rabbit holes of obscure topics. So just when you think you know everything, it's just like, oh wow, I learned something new. And it was cool diving into some of these more obscure Sentinels and reading back on some of these old issues you forget about or haven't read in a while. It kind of gives you a new appreciation for some of these stories. Other ones, it's just like, what were they thinking? You know what? I like the ingenuity behind a lot of these different Sentinel types and the ideas. Again, going back to the never-ending adaptation between mutants and Sentinel models.
And where can people find you online?
So I can be found mostly on Instagram, although I do have Twitter. I don't really post there as much. Same username, J_cosmic with a K. I do a lot of cosplaying. I am big into the Marvel Legends collecting, so there's a lot of that as well.
It's so good to see you as well. Please tell Brian hello for me, and I hope we get to hang out sometime again soon, man. I love the Death Robot. I love the big giant superhero battle. I get excited when I see them, but what these actually represent are this deeper theme of how we connect to the X-Men as outsiders, and like, these are the scariest. These are the big villains. It's not Magneto. It's the Sentinels. The Sentinels is the biggest villain in the X-Men franchise. It's been a crazy ride this month. Thank you everybody for all of the support and enthusiasm as we've recorded these episodes. I feel like I have a whole education in like Sentinel now, which is an amazing thing. And it gives me all kinds of ideas about stories I want to write. So in conclusion, you can find Gray Malkin Lane, Gray_Malkin_Lane on Instagram. I also have a Discord and a TikTok where Taylor Vessel's putting up regular videos from this show animated. It's a lot of fun. We're done with Sentinels Month, so we're back to the normal cadence. The next two episodes you can watch for on both channels. On the main show, we're going to be reviewing Incredible Hulk number 150. This is an old Havoc and Lorna Dane storyline, and I'm thrilled to have Leah Williams coming back to talk Lorna with me. The next episode out on the Patreon is one that I've been excited for like 4 months since I planned it, because it's one of my favorite characters of all time, Princess Python. Steve Duda and Demanda Martini are joining me. Demanda has crafted an entire Zelda Dubois. Look, I love this character. One of my top favorites at Marvel of all time. It's insane. I have a shirt with Princess Python on it. She's hanging on my wall by Seth Martell. It's fantastic. So please listen. It's going to be a hell of a time on that particular recording. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Theo. Thank you, Justin. We'll see you back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane's Patreon channel.
Save big money this October at Menards. October is Fire Safety Month. From smoke and carbon monoxide alarms to fire extinguishers and more. Kidda home safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Get a kitted direct wire smoke alarm. A hardwired smoke alarm also has a AA battery backup for coverage in case of power outages. Say big at Menards and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money.